I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Brand, have you looked over the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I've looked over the minutes, and I would approve them.
Representative Brand moves the minutes for January 11th, 2023. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Ayes have it. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Turning the gavel over to Vice Chair Jordan.
Okay, up first today is House File 172. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 172 be recommended to go to the Ways and Means Committee.
And Representative Hansen, I believe you have the A2 author's amendment. Would you like to move and explain your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the A2 amendment were recommendations from the reviser and from LCCMR staff. Maybe if Ms. Taylor could just describe the reviser recommendations.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, all of these were from LCCMR staff. I don't recall any else reviser, but I can go through it unless LCCMR staff wants to.
If you could go through.
Sure. The first two lines of the amendment, lines 1.2 and 1.3, just clarify the availability of an appropriation. Lines 1.4 through 1.7 add some language regarding any money that's or investment income. This is standard language that's been added, but it just says that they would need to have approval in order to keep the income and not go back to the trust fund. Line 1.8 just adds some clarification that the appropriation can be used to plan and engineer. Line 1.9 through 1.11 clarifies that appropriation can be used to plan, engineer, construct a boardwalk, viewing platforms, and some soft trails within a park. Then lines 1.12 and 1.13 just clarifies that appropriation cannot be used to purchase any habitable residential structures. 1.14 fixes a technical correction saying that it's the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board rather than the City of Minneapolis. 1.15 is just a technical correction to the headnote, and then lines 1.16 through 1.20 adds an extension of appropriations for the Minnesota Invasive Terrestrial Plants and Pest Center.
Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form he would like. All those in favor?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Heitzman.
Question?
Yep.
Go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to just quickly confirm. I see lines 1.8, it was just mentioned, and line 1.9 through 1.11, engineering and planning being included. I'm wondering if there was any explanation. A lot of these projects come to the LCCMR with that in their plan and in the bill language. I'm wondering if something shifted in the plan itself. Was there a reason that this was introduced, maybe an example that the reviser's office might have provided, maybe Ms. Taylor could mention?
Chair Hansen, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Jordan, members of the committee, my name is Michael Varian, and I am staff with LCCMR. And in regards to that question, the proposal did come in largely focused on the restoration side of it, and in putting together the bill language, they had asked to add the planning and engineering for the ability to include the boardwalks and trails that were in the proposal but weren't as explicitly called out at that time. And so this was a request of the project.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to confirm, there was no questions or issues that the director or other membership on the LCCMR had in reference to this. Everybody was happy with this change.
Mr. Varian.
Chair Jordan and members of the committee, to the best of my knowledge, Chair Hansen here may be able to speak more to the members' thoughts on that, but based on conversations with the project manager, they did ask for recreation funds in the proposal. So,
Chair Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Heintzman, I've heard of no opposition to this provision.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to kind of go through that a little bit. It is something that you'd kind of expect in the original language, so, you know, at this late stage, having changes being made, I'm glad to hear there's apparently no opposition to this. So, moving on.
Moving on. With that, Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And the motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. And to that, Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm pleased to be here to present House File 172 as amended. This is something different in the last few years. We actually have a recommendation from the Commission for expenditure of Environmental Trust Fund dollars. And to be here in person and present this, I also have capable LCCMR staff who will be walking through it in a moment. But this package is the first time I think we've had a recommendation in 2 years. Last year there was not a recommendation, and the year before that there was a recommendation, and then there was some bumpy routes in those years as well. So this one, I think the commission worked very well. I believe, if my memory is correct, former Representative Lewick and former Representative Tice were supportive of making the recommendation on this. And I think it was an example of bipartisan and bicameral working together to make this recommendation. As with any package, not everything everybody agrees on. But they could agree that it was a good package. And so we have the actual appropriations that Mr. Varian will walk through, but I also have with me, we had the 12 of 17 votes for the recommendation. We also worked throughout the summer on a bipartisan, bicameral basis, looking at some of the boilerplate provisions relating to how do we spend money on capital projects. And Commissioner Albright is here, who chaired that, and we also had 12 votes in favor of that. There were, as we went through some of these very old provisions, we found there were things that we could do as policy through the commission, but there were some things where we needed statutory changes. And so those are in the bill as well, again, having received 12 votes. And we took, through that subcommittee process, Commissioner Albright is available here to describe that. We also have in the audience some of the project managers, specifically the aquatic invasive species research. That's the highest, I think, amount in the package. So one of the large amounts is the proposal for MASRC, which is the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center. And we can go to Mr. Varian to walk through the appropriations. You do have a spreadsheet in front of you and your House research provisions as well. So with that.
Great. First on my list is Michael Varian from the LCCMR.
Right. Chair Jordan, members of the committee, again, my name is Michael Varian and I am staff with LCCMR. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to House File 172. I know that there are some returning members and there's many new faces here, so maybe a little background on LCCMR and the ENRTF. So the Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund is a permanent fund in the state treasury that was created by voters through constitutional amendment to support activities that protect, conserve, preserve, and enhance Minnesota's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. It's funded with 40% of the annual proceeds from the Minnesota State Lottery, as well as income from investments managed by the State Board of Investment. In FY22, it received a little over $44 million from lottery proceeds, but in the year of value of the fund went down $193 million, and in FY21, there was a total increase of $350 million. $50 million was from the lottery, and $300 million was from the investments. LCCMR is the 17-member joint commission is responsible for making recommendations to the legislature for how the money from this constitutionally dedicated Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund is appropriated, and then for conducting the oversight of the approved projects associated with the expenditures. The LCCMR is a 17-member body made of 5 senators, 5 representatives, and 7 citizens. And they are assisted by its own nonpartisan staff, myself, Mike Campana, Corey Layfield, Noah Fribley, Diana Griffith, and Director Rebecca Nash, who was unable to be here today. So thus I am standing in. We have included in your packets the list of LCCMR members, but I also want to acknowledge those on the committee who serve or have served on the LCCMR, Representative Heintzman and Representative Hansen. The process for LCCMR includes recommendations are typically the result of multi-stage competitive process. LCCMR identifies priorities from its strategic plan for inclusion in the annual request for proposals. We receive applications from the entities all across the state in response. Proposals are reviewed, evaluated, and we have multiple rounds of scoring. Members hear presentations and ask questions of the proposers. Research projects undergo additional external scientific peer review. The top proposals are then selected and put into bill form and must be approved by at least 12 of the 17 members to become LCCMR's recommendation. That bill is then presented to the legislature for your consideration. The amount available for appropriation this year was $79,644,000. This is 5.5% of the value of the fund on June 30th prior to the start of the biennium. We also had an additional $189,000 from the Great Lakes Protection Account available for recommendation, which brought the total to $79,833,000. The Great Lakes Protection Account or fund was created in the late 80s by the Great Lakes states to address the ecological problems of the largest single source of freshwater in the world. The GLPF is an endowment, and Minnesota receives earnings each year. By state law, the appropriations from the fund must be recommended by LCCMR for projects to protect water quality in the Great Lakes. In response to the 2023 RFP, we received 174 proposals requesting a total of $164 million. 85 proposals made the first cut and were invited for presentation. In late August, 83 projects totaling $79,833,000 were selected by the commission for recommendation to the legislature. There were 13 yes, 3 no, and 1 excused on that vote. While the projects before you today in Article 1 of the bill are a result of this competitive process and were selected for funding by a supermajority of members, the walkthrough and final vote of these projects in bill form by LCCMR has not yet happened. The legislature last year charged the LCCMR with submitting a report to the legislature on recommended changes related to the use of ENRTF funds for capital construction project purposes. These recommendations were submitted in a report and are also included in Article 2 of today's bill. Unless there are any questions at this point, Chair Jordan, I can proceed with a high-level walkthrough of Article 1.
Please proceed.
So in Article 1 of the appropriations, subdivision 1 and 2, total appropriations are that $79,833,000, and this includes both the trust fund dollars and the Great Lakes Protection Account. Subdivisions 3 through 10 represent the LCCMR priority areas to which proposers applied, first of which is foundational natural resource data and information. This is subdivision 3, starting on page 2, and includes $8,219,000 in appropriations for 19 projects. These are projects that primarily involve collection, analysis, mapping, dissemination of foundational data and information needed for conservation planning and decision making. Subdivision 4, starting on page 8, is water resources, and this includes $8,328,000 in appropriations for 13 projects. These include research and demonstration projects, as well as development of new techniques and technologies to improve protection of the quality and quantity of our water resources. You will see that the Great Lakes Protection Account funds are included in this subdivision in for paragraph E, a project on microplastic pollution in Lake Superior. Subdivision 5 on page 12 is environmental education and includes $3,905,000 for 8 projects. This category includes outdoor experiences and hands-on youth education and training. Subdivision 6, starting on page 15, is aquatic and terrestrial invasive species and includes $5,104,000 for 2 projects. This category includes research, development, and demonstration and education projects to prevent, reduce, or control invasive species. It is not for ongoing management of invasive species. The majority of funds in this category are going to the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center at the U of M, which was established with ENRTF funding. Subdivision 7 on page 16 is air quality, climate change, and renewable energy for $3,913,000. There are 6 projects. And this category includes improvements to air quality, climate change, mitigation and adaptation, greenhouse gas reductions, renewable energy, and energy efficiencies. Subdivision 8, starting on page 18, is methods to protect or restore land, water, and habitat. There's $15,997,000 for 18 projects. This category includes innovations in ways we can go about protecting and restoring our natural resources. Examples include Minnesota Millions is trying to tackle how do we get more trees grown in the ground. The Panaway Project has experimental way to restore lake bed vegetation, and the Silvopasture Project as a way to restore oak savannas, but also scattered private woodlands that are otherwise creating seed source for invasive species and agricultural pests. Subdivision 9, starting on page 24, is land acquisition, habitat, recreation, and includes $31,241,000 for 15 projects. Efforts to enhance habitat connectivity, benefit water quality, improve access for management, and increase public access for recreation, particularly in areas of the state with limited public land. It also includes funding for DNR's grant program for local parks, trails, and natural areas, as well as parks and trails acquisition and development, also some mountain biking trails, Superior Hiking Trail, and others. For acquisitions, refer to the handout in your packet that shows where in the state these acquisitions are proposed and what kind of ownership they would be. Subdivision 10, starting on page 29, is for administrative and emerging issues, includes $3,126,000 for 4 appropriations. This is for fiscal management of non-state entity reimbursements for these projects managed by the DNR. The emerging issues account, LCCMR administration, and the legacy website, which is required by law. Subdivisions 11 through 17 on pages 30 through 38 are conditions of funding typically get included every year. Subdivision 18 is carry forward and extensions, and that starts on page 38. These are projects that for one reason or another need a little more time to complete their outcomes. And sections 3 and 4 on pages 39 and 42 are technical changes to appropriations from last year. One is removing mention of 25,000 students. This project was not funded at the level for those numbers. And then the Mesabi Trail construction toward the city of Tower, not all the way to Tower. That is the appropriations portion of the bill, Chair Jordan. I'd be happy to stand for questions at this point. Otherwise, I would ask to turn it over to Mike Campana and Member Albrecht to talk about Article 2.
Thank you, Mr. Varian. Representative Scarborough, did you have a question?
I was just wondering when we were going to be able to ask questions.
I have an answer to that. We'll do that after we've heard from all the testifiers.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. With that, thank you, Mr. Varian. Next is Mr. Mike Campana from the LCCMR.
Good afternoon, Chair Jordan, members of the committee. My name.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Mike Campana. I am a senior project analyst with the LCCMR, and I will be providing an overview of the capital projects section of the bill, which you find in Article 2. As Representative Hansen indicated, this section reflects recommendations made by the LCCMR and would amend the LCCMR Governing Law Chapter 116P. In recent years, there has been an increasing number of capital projects, as well as larger capital projects seeking funding from the ENRTF. This has raised questions within the Commission regarding if it was receiving sufficient information to make proper recommendations to the legislature on these often more complex projects, and if appropriate conditions were in place to help ensure success of these projects. The LCCMR began to conduct fact-finding in late 2021 and early 2022, primarily collecting information on existing conditions and requirements related to capital projects funded with general obligation or GO bond proceeds. In June 2022, the legislator directed the LCCMR to provide a report and recommendations on this issue. At this point, Chair Jordan, I'd like to pass it over to Commissioner Albrecht to talk more about the process and thinking of the LCCMR in developing the recommendations contained in the bill, and then I can follow with an overview of the specific sections of the bill.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Albrecht. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rita Albright. I sit on legislative LCCMR Commission. And last year, when we received the directive from the legislature that we needed to review capital projects, we decided the best route to do that was to have a subcommittee. So we had a subcommittee that included a Democratic House and Senate member, a Republican House and Senate member, and I believe three citizen members. And as chair of that committee, we walked through, first of all, we had to say, what is a capital project? And so we really relied on legislative staff and Department of Admin and other agencies to help us know, according to statute, what is a capital project. And then we went through them, each of the categories, one by one, to decide, is this a capital project that really requires statutory change, or can we just adjust our rules and our RFP to make it clear for proposers what their requirements would be if they had a capital project? And so we really strived to reduce the number of statutory changes because we felt it was better for the process to try and incorporate that within our application and rules project process. But so what you have is a set of suggested statutory changes, as well as we have some suggested changes to our application process. And really, as you can appreciate, being we have such a large budget surplus, it's hard to give out money. And having some sideboards for giving out money is helpful. As Mr. Varian has explained to you, we had, I think it was 175 applications for about almost $80 million. And so here we have 17-member commission. We all come from different areas of the state with different expertise and different ideas of what makes sense for what should be funded. A lot of us have hometown projects that we would like, you know, legislators have district projects they'd like to see. And so we needed to have really good guidance for a number of reasons. Number one, so the commission could understand what the process was and make it fair and equitable. But really, for proposers, if you've ever had done a grant application or sat on a committee that granted out dollars, I used to sit for 6 years on Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, and that was a tough job too, to get grant out money for regional parks and trails. And so having really clear guidelines and understanding what the process was and the expectations for proposers when they came to the table was important. In addition to that, it really helps our staff to understand and be fair and equitable when they're giving advice and feedback on proposals for projects so that everybody gets the same kind of information back. And so that's why we appreciated that the legislature directed LCCMR to go through this process and come back with some recommendations. And that's what we have here today. I think I'll stop there and let you ask questions if you have them. Thank you.
Mr. Campana, did you have more to say, or should we go to questions?
If the committee would like, and Chair, if you would like, I can go through the section, the specific sections of the capital project section, but it's up to you.
I think that would be helpful. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chair Jordan. So to begin with, Article 2, Section 1 and 2 would create protections to ensure that buildings and other fixed, long-lived capital assets constructed with ENRTF funds continue to be used for their intended purpose for at least 25 years once construction is completed. Protections include requiring approval for alterations in the use or sale, repayment to the ENRTF if there is a sale or change of use, the filing of a notice of funding restriction on the property, and annual reporting on the property's use. These protections parallel current statutory requirements for land acquired with the ENRTF dollars and are similar to requirements for capital projects funded using state GO bond proceeds. Moving on, Section 3, Subdivision 1, would require that all funds needed to complete a capital construction project or phase must be secured prior to appropriated ENRTF dollars becoming available. The idea is to avoid a situation where a project begins but cannot be completed. This is similar to current requirements applied to capital projects funded from state GO bond proceeds. Next, Section 3, Subdivision 2 would require a 50% match from some other source than the trust fund for capital construction projects. This would help ensure the applicant's commitment and readiness to complete the project. This is similar, but not identical, to requirements for GO bonds. Section 3, Subdivision 3 would require recipients of ENRTF funds to ensure that their project complies with sustainable building guidelines, including energy conservation standards. This has been part of appropriation rider language for ENRTF appropriations for at least the last 10 years. It is also a requirement for capital projects funded from GO bonds. Incorporating this requirement into Chapter 116P will provide greater clarity and awareness to applicants so they can plan from the beginning for this requirement. Section 3, Subdivision 5 provides references to other current statutory requirements that apply to capital construction projects funded from the ENRTF. References relate to statutory provisions for consultation and review, such as pre-design and historic and archaeological review, contracting, purchasing, and wages, energy use and conservation, and accessibility. This language was not intended to create any new requirements, but to clarify and raise awareness to applicants about these requirements. The LCCMR also recommended that the legislature consider a requirement for public access when appropriate for capital construction projects. The commission did not propose specific language, and it is not in the current bill before you. We are happy to follow up with any members to discuss specific language. Finally, there are two notes regarding the recommendations that I would like to point out. First, the commission's recommendation, as reflected in the bill, is that any new requirements apply only to projects that will construct something with total costs of $10,000 or more, so not purchases of capital equipment or most land acquisitions. However, these requirements would apply to land acquisitions if the purpose of the acquisition is to construct a capital asset. The second point I wanted to point out to all of you is the commission's recommendation, as reflected in the bill, is that if adopted, proposals submitted in 2024 would be the first projects that needed to comply with any new requirements. This would help ensure applicants are aware of any new requirements prior to submitting a proposal. With that, Chair Jordan, I think we're happy to answer any further questions the committee may have.
Questions from members? Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. And we're going through this, and I know this is something that's been discussed in the past, but for the benefit of those that might not be tracking some of what's being discussed and proposed here, even though it is repetitive, but we're always looking to try to fix a problem, I'm assuming, and this is language that may be going after that. You mentioned that already in LCCMR's rules requiring proposers come with proposals that match certain criteria. We're now apparently putting that in statute. It might be beneficial if you have some kind of data to help us understand how big of a problem this might have been, since we're now putting this in statute. As you were going through, which was mentioned in testimony, many previous projects maybe did not comply with rules potentially, and I'm wondering if we're talking about 5%, 50%, how big of a problem was this, and maybe that could be explained.
Mr. Campana.
Chair Jordan, Representative Heintzman, I'll start with your first question. We did take a look when we were doing our research into the last about 10 years of projects funded from about 2013 to 2021. What we saw was that the percentage of funding going to some sort of capital type activity in a project had increased from 22% of ENRTF funding to 48% of ENRTF funding. So there are quite a few more projects receiving this type of funding. We have had some recent projects that have required a lot more, I think, staff activity to manage and to oversee, and had more issues. And I think the commission has been aware of those problems, and we've tried to deal with those, I think, on a case-by-case basis. And I think by the attempt here with the commission is to put some rules in place ahead of time so they don't have to be dealt by a case-by-case basis, but it's very clear moving forward what the requirements would be.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Heintzman. You know, the saying is prevention is better than cleanup. And through the process that Commissioner Albright did, we had public meetings. You know, they're available. We can look at the information that was provided. I will use one example from memory. I think we had the potential of having a building that would be half built because the money that was supposed to come from another source was not really available. And so that's a challenge, and so having some of these requirements in here so we can prevent those problems. And it's hard for the staff to respond to that in the heat of the moment when the appropriation is there, but maybe other funding doesn't come through. And so I could defer to Commissioner Albright, but prevention is better than cleanup, and I think just to be clear, I'd say this is probably about half of the things we went through. The other half of proposals are policy that the commission and commission staff will use versus statutory changes. It was very clear, and our Senate colleagues were very insistent of trying to make sure we only really had to do statute if we needed to, and that's what you have in front of you.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm tracking Representative Hansen with what you're driving at, and I think that there may be some benefit here to putting these quote-unquote guardrails in place. I hope that we do potentially revisit this again and look more closely at this. The flexibility that was previously there may have allowed some examples that may not be shining and positive, but in most cases provided an opportunity that maybe some communities might not have otherwise had. And if there does need to be an adjustment made down the road, I hope that we can do that in a bipartisan way, because I don't want communities missing out, because now there's more bureaucracy, more government coming in, and we could have some challenges going forward.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Heintzman. We're on the same track, because actually the commission subcommittee recommended revisiting this, I believe, in 4 years to allow two legislative sessions to go by. And so the effective date also, we wanted to make sure the package that's in front of you, they had responded to an RFP prior to the recommendation for the capital. So we didn't want to impose the capital requirements on those that were responding to the RFP before that. And so if we can adopt this, then that would be clear for the next round with people responding. And that's one of the reasons to have this moving quickly so we can have clarity for people moving forward.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. That's all my questions at the moment.
Great. Representative Liz Lagarde.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. First of all, thank you for all your hard work. This isn't easy, and I greatly appreciate it. The only question I'd have or concern or caution when you look forward is not all communities have the ability to afford the match. And so what I don't want to do is exclude those who are trying to make it with those that have the ability to pay. So I don't think that's the intent at all, but I got a little compassion for the little guy. Thank you.
Commissioner Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Really good point. I appreciate that, too. I come from a small town in Cooch County, Big Falls. So, you know, I understand how difficult it is to get that together. One of the things that I would suggest is that when we understand that it's a capital project, state bonding could be a match so that that project could go forward and it would give a legislator a really good understanding and guidance on why they should get state bonding, because they could have environmental natural resource trust funding and match it up with state bonding. And for me, that really meets a goal, and that is that we're going to stay true to the constitutional amendment that we're guided by, which is to protect, conserve, preserve, and enhance our air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. And so, you know, when we're thinking about, okay, building a building, is that meeting our constitutional requirement? Well, you know, if half of it comes from that maybe and half from state bonding, then that would make sense to me. Or if you're going to put in a marina, is that really protecting the water? I'm not sure. So your point is well taken. I do understand, and we did have that discussion in our subcommittee because that was a lot of the concern. But I will say that giving applicants an extra round, it's not going to go in. Our funding application process and timeline was just approved at noon today at our meeting, and so that next round is not going to include this, but it should give them some time to go to their legislators or go to their funders or go to their friends to raise that money. So thanks for that question.
Further discussion of the bill. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Scarba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the matching dollars that you just brought up, I was like, so does bonding, would that be a match? And you're kind of hoping it is. What about the legacy dollars? Would that be non-trust?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you might find a number of the folks in the audience would have some resistance to buildings with legacy dollars, but
okay.
That just might be my conjecture on my part.
Right. Representative Scarborough?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen, closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is a good package. You know, it is comprehensive. I want to thank the commission members, and particularly Commissioner Albright, for moving through a challenging thing. It was a directive from the legislature because we had difficulty resolving it during session last year. And Representative Heintzman, as you know, sometimes commission members don't always get along between the House and the Senate or between parties. But I think we hit the recommendation here that this is what is needed in Article 2. And then when you look through the projects, there's things everywhere throughout the state. I mean, it's a broad package. I believe it meets the constitutional requirements. And just to say, you know, with the constitutional amendment allocation expiring relatively soon, I think it's really important to pass an LCCMR recommendation bill. I think it's really important to show that the commission has its act together and that we can present this to the legislature. I do, you know, last year I had proposals for some reform. I think they will be coming for the commission as well. But this is in front of us, and I am bringing it quickly so that we could move quickly and demonstrate to Minnesotans that we have got our act together with the trust fund, and we should adopt these recommendations as they are. I ask for your support.
All right. And with that, Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 172, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Great. The motion prevails. That's the chair and I are going to swap.
Nothing to you, right? You see a billion go like that.
Give Representative Jordan a moment to get ready and testifiers to make sure that they've signed in those that have testified. Representative Jordan, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Oh, that's loud. I move that House File 68 be re-referred to the Legacy Committee.
Representative Jordan moves that House File 68 be recommended to be re-referred to the Legacy Finance Committee. Representative Jordan, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today, I am presenting House File 68, a bill to raise the daily per diem rate for a number of state boards under our jurisdiction from $55 a day to $125. This bill attempts to solve a problem that we've spent a lot of time in this committee over the years wondering how to solve, how to make sure our state boards represent the interests of all Minnesotans when there is a lack of regional, economic, racial, gender, age, or ethnic diversity on our boards. One issue I have heard from many Minnesotans is that they cannot afford to serve on these boards. Many cite taking time off from work as a barrier. Others say that they have young children and cannot afford the child care. A perennial complaint I have heard from Greater Minnesota is the ability to drive in and spend the amount of time it would take to come in from all over the state. None of these should be a barrier to service. And that is why House File 68 proposes this increase in daily per diem for the public members of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission, the Minnesota Zoological Board, the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council, the Board of Soil and Water Resources, or Bowser, the Clean Water Council, the Environmental Quality Board, or EQB, and the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources, or LCCMR. The $125 amount would bring these boards and commissions in line with those serving on our watershed and soil and water conservation districts, or SWCDs, a change that was championed by then Representative Marquardt in 2021 and supported bipartisanly in this committee. This per diem increase, I want to note, is only for the public members, so that would not apply to any of us legislators. It also does not apply to agency heads. This per diem was last increased in 1990. This was before four members of this committee were born. That raise to $125 is also approximately what the per diem rate would be had it kept up from inflation from 1990. It would actually be less, and this is according to the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair. With that, I'd like to turn over to public testimony.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. First up, we have Colleen Moriarty, League of Women Voters of Minneapolis.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Colleen Moriarty. I'm here representing the League of Women Voters of Minnesota. I'm currently serving as the president of the League of Women Voters of Minneapolis. There are 38 leagues around the state of Minnesota, and we ourselves in Minneapolis are a 102-year-old organization. I'm here to express my support for House File 68, authored by Representative Jordan. Increasing per diems for natural resource boards, councils, and commissions is a way of empowering voters and defending democracy. Moreover, everyone in our state is connected to the environment, and a variety of voices far from each part of the state is an important environmental issue. Our organization has a long history of prioritizing issues that increase civic participation and show nonpartisan beliefs in issues. Because of the current low stipend, many folks with lower incomes, people from greater Minnesota, parents, young adults are left out of important discussions. In fact, these groups can often face increased rainfall and pollution and the hardest to bring valuable resources and urgency to their administrative districts. Cutting down on the cost for people to leave work, to travel to meetings, is an important solution in increasing government transparency. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Rita Albright, LCCMR.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As I mentioned, I serve on LCCMR and drive from Bemidji. I have in the past also served on the Governor's Workforce Development Board. I've also served 6 years under the Dayton administration on the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. And the Workforce Development Board usually met in the metro. Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails met in the center of the state. We tried hard because we had members from the Northwest, from the Northeast, from Lyon County down in the far southwestern corner, and Rochester. And all of these folks were, public servants. Most of them were retired. And so that's the challenge that we have is to be able to have some folks who are not retired. And as Representative Jordan mentioned, how long ago it was this amount was changed, but we really need to be able to encourage young people to sign up to be on commissions, to ask for an appointment to a commission, and at the cost of daycare or having to get a substitute for their job or take a day off and lose pay, it is really tough at $55. It might come closer if we were to raise that per diem. But those of you who drove in from Northwest Minnesota, Representative Burkle, or from Ely, Representative Scraba, or from Rochester, or Representative Lithgard from up in the north, you know that driving down wasn't that great. If you came down this morning like I did, and you know I left town at 6 o'clock, and it was a white knuckle drive, and I almost text Representative Hansen and said, you know what, I ain't going to show up because we can't do it by Zoom here in the House, only in the Senate. But I'm able to take that time off because I am retired. But others, if they had that choice, they might not. But it might help if they did have remuneration that was commensurate with the commitment to the state of Minnesota and the work they do on these commissions. Thank you.
Members, any questions? Any questions? Any closing comments?
Thank you for your support.
I need to ask if there are any other testifiers in the audience. We do have one, someone who would like to testify, so please come forward. Yeah. Welcome, and state your name for the record.
Chadson, my name is Mark Hughes, and I'm an old name that's been around here quite a while. And Rick Fisher taught me everything I need to know and more.
Okay.
But anyways, I wanted to when I heard you say about this, I, believe it or not, I've served 12 years on the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities, which is no board that was mentioned here today. But it's the longest you can serve on the state of Minnesota board. You can also reapply. But I also think, and I'm still employed, but I also think that it's important for the people of Minnesota to get involved in some of our boards again, because it makes it a stronger position and lets people know in the state of Minnesota that they do have a voice. And if they need to make a change, they do have time to build that foundation, to make a change on some of these boards. And so I don't think we should be included or excluded because we're retired, employed, or we're in college, or we're out of college, or we're this or we're that. I think we should get everybody involved in the state of Minnesota, one for all and all for one. Make it a much, we're not only a great state, we could be greater. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify? Anyone else? Clerk Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this bill isn't about necessarily paying people for doing this. We know that people want to serve. This is about making it possible for Minnesotans to serve and give back to their state and their environment. So thank you, members, and I ask for your support.
Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 68 be referred to the Legacy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. It is adopted. House File 68 moves to the Legacy Committee. Thank you. And then, members, we have a couple changes just looking forward for tomorrow. Tomorrow we will have Representative Vang's turtle bill, which we've heard many times before, and Representative Burkle's deer stands on WMAs, which we've heard many times before. So we're trying to hear a number of things that have been before us. With drafting, we probably next week will be hearing lottery and loop proposal, maybe MLCAT, and maybe some other bills that, depending on when they're introduced and our timing. So we're trying to get those through. I know that members are getting other bills introduced, and we all have bills that have to make multiple stops. I also think the cannabis bill will be coming through this committee for the sections that relate to the environment. So that's kind of foreshadowing the week ahead. Members, any questions or?
Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. We had talked and we have visited offline about this as well, but maybe we now have some idea, especially with the revisor's office being somewhat backed up. Are we going to have a chance for so many of our new members to at least get a chance to meet and maybe discuss a few issues with commissioners? Maybe they could come in and do a overview of some kind at some point.
Representative Heinzman, good question. Tomorrow we will have the Minnesota Conservation Corps coming in to give an overview. We're trying to fit in some of the smaller entities first. I believe the DNR and the PCA with their budget proposals will be coming next week. So we want to kind of combine their budget with the overviews. And I anticipate we'll be having probably overviews and a bill or two just to try to move through. So we're trying to take a few each time, bites at the apple, but we anticipate getting there. We also, continue to have discussions with our Senate counterparts. I know they were happy with the EAB joint hearing, so there may be some topic areas where we have another joint House and Senate thing, but that isn't imminent. So that's a long answer to your question.
Thank you, Chair. You know, and it would be nice, if it's okay, it would be nice if some of those conversations, there would be time. And assuming that we're seeing a budget presentation and going through all of that, I'm assuming that we're likely going to be chewing up the opportunity for members to actually get a ballpark idea where we're at on this stuff and what the agencies do. And if that's forthcoming, great, but I'm concerned that we might be running into some issues as we're continuing to move legislation without having a chance to get to know the agencies. Not that I'm necessarily advocating for days and days and days be spent on that, but a ballpark idea would be nice.
Representative Heintzman, we have lots of members on both sides of the aisle that want to ask lots of questions of lots of the agencies. So I'm trying to manage the time and to make sure that everybody has that opportunity. With that, we are adjourned.